Hey team, welcome back to the show. Today it is Coach Natalie and I talking about how to optimize your digestion for easier fat loss and muscle growth. This is basically going to be some poop talk. Natalie, are you ready for this?
I'm always ready to talk about poop.
Okay, I love it. I actually don't poop, but
You
what's
don't? Well, we're going to get into why that might be today. So,
the movie with it's like James Franco and where they like go and it's terrible. I can't believe this was even a movie. They go and kill Kim Jong-un. James Franco and Seth Rogen doing this. Like he like claims
was
he
it
doesn't
the
poop.
Oh man, I know what you're talking about and I can't think of
And then
it.
you like ask him if he poops and he's like 3 times a day or so. I don't actually remember what he says, so I butchered that whole quote. But anyways,
The dictator was Sacha Baron Cohen, right?
I haven't actually watched that one.
Me either, but we're gonna stop recording this podcast and then I'm gonna remember what movie this is.
Natalie's favorite movie is actually Blades of Glory.
I do like
Why
it.
is that? Not
It's not my favorite, but I do like it. It's just funny,
okay.
sardonically irreverent.
I'm a Talladega Nights guy. When it comes
Also.
to Will Ferrell, Elf always a classic, but not my favorite Will Ferrell movie by any means. Anyways, let's talk about digestion. So first, I think this is like one of the aspects of coaching, like when you're talking about. I think people like come into coaching expecting a lot of times to, hey, we're going to talk about my training and my nutrition. Not so much like we're going to talk about my stress, my sleep, your menstrual cycle, how heavy is your flow, what are your bowel movements look like, right? Like all these things, but really it is an entire ecosystem of things that is going to impact your results. And to have the very much like these things are basically like signals that we can look at or messages that we can look at. To or I like the like from the book The Period Repair Manual, she talks about it, like your menstrual cycle kind of being like your monthly report card of where your health is at. I think that's a good way to put it. And I like digestion can honestly give us pretty similar clues as far as like, hey, this thing might be out of whack. We might need to address this. So very much digestion as far as why does it matter, it's going to be very important for both your health and for optimal physique development. If all you care about is getting jacked and lean, it's still going to be important. So for example, we're talking about like, hey, maybe you're someone who struggles with constipation a lot. All right. So your estrogen clearance, basically removal of excess estrogen from your body, is going to come through bowel movements. So it is a lot more likely for like someone who is constipated consistently that estrogen will be reabsorbed and basically recirculate, and then will create an issue, this instance of estrogen dominance, which will then lead to hormones being out of balance and a lot of downstream issues that will hurt, again, fat loss and muscle growth. Or if you have diarrhea consistently, which again is pretty common, things just tend to kind of run straight through you. You're really gonna have a very hard time absorbing and using the nutrients that you're taking in, right? So thus, the protein that you're eating, all the nutrients that you're eating, a lot less of that will actually be absorbed by your body. And thus it'll be much harder for you to build muscle. And a lot of the things we need to support, again, like the conversion when we're like looking at your thyroid, like the conversion of T4 to T3. Your body won't be absorbing those things as well. The production of sex hormones. There's going to be so much there that will be like so many of those nutrients we need for muscle growth again, and just to be healthy, have the most responsive body that you won't be able to absorb if things are just running straight through you. So again, digestion is going to be such an important variable in creating your best physique. We talk about poop a lot, honestly, with our clients. So, if you are going to work with a coach, I think it's something that's important to get comfortable with.
I think it
Anything else?
surprises our clients, especially at first, that we sort of get into those questions because a lot of people don't know that for all the reasons that you just mentioned, it is a big deal. And like it's kind of like you just, if you don't know, it's like you don't know what you don't know, right? So like you might not think it important to tell your coach if you're constipated or you're having diarrhea or excessive bloating, gas, like things of this nature. Because you might not understand that it absolutely is 100% within our scope and purview, as it's incredibly related to lifestyle and the food that you eat. So yeah, I think most people are really surprised that this comes up. And this is why, as coaches, it's important to ask specific questions because sometimes people just don't know. Like it wouldn't occur to them to mention those things unless you were to specifically ask. And then you kind of start peeling back layers of the onion. Right. And it's like, oh, we are having issues here. Okay, this makes sense then with what we're seeing elsewhere. So don't be surprised if you get into nutrition coaching and this comes up a lot. I know that all of us on this team have this on our weekly check-ins. Mm-hmm. Like we ask every single week about digestion and like, yeah, actually have you pick a rating from the Bristol stool chart, which we'll get into a little bit later, but it's that important. So
yeah, basically we know what your poop looks like every week. We have you tell us. So first, can you kind of give us a high level overview of what happens during digestion?
Sure. So I'm going to skim over this. There's a lot more to it, but because we want to respect everyone's time and attention spans here, this is a very high level overview. Okay. So the most important thing to know is digestion begins in the mouth, right? Now, it is your body's goal to move food from the mouth and out the other side with no backup stalls or issues, okay? So our food begins digesting within the mouth. And we start with chewing, right? So we chew our food, and then salivary enzymes break down our food, passes through the esophagus, and eventually gets into the stomach. Stomach kind of churns the food to help break it down further, moves through the small intestine. Then you get more digestive enzymes from the pancreas, bile from the liver. And then that right there is a very big clue as to like how a lot of these systems are related. We'll talk through a little bit later. And then nutrients are absorbed and waste moves into the large intestine. And then the waste gets stored in the rectum and then it is ready for elimination. So again, very, very high level overview there of how this process works from mouth to the other end. And of course, what we're going to talk through today is some of the issues that it could encounter along the way.
Absolutely. Okay. So then from there, getting into when we're talking about digestion, I think it can be kind of this vague, okay, how's your digestion? So typically what we're looking here when we're looking at good digestion is what are your bowel movements like? So first, what's the consistency like? Typically on the Bristol stool chart, which again, we have like a graphic where clients every week when they check in will give us an idea of what have your bowel movements typically looked like. And there's a whole scale. What does it go? Is it 1 to 8?
It's 7.
1 to 7.
And by the way, for the listeners, you can Google this. You can just Google Bristol stool chart if you're curious, B-R-I-S-T-O-L, and see like a million different artist renderings of the Bristol stool chart. But you can kind of like pause this podcast and go look right now just to see what we're talking through. But it is one of the quickest ways to get to the bottom of things here.
Yeah. So the consistency is important, right? And this will really start to tell us like, hey, are you dehydrated? Are we lacking fiber? Or do we have too much fiber? So typically on that chart, we'll want it to be either a type 3, which is going to be kind of sausage shaped with cracks on the surface, kind of a Mr. Hanky looking poop. Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo. I think you're the only person who would know that reference, but I'm glad you did.
Can you please go into more graphic detail than that? No, I'm just kidding. But the chart like ranges, right? Basically from constipated at the top, number 1, and then all the way through to like loose stools, diarrhea. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of think of it as a progression that way. So you're explaining numbers 3 and 4 right in the middle.
Which are going to be kind of, hey, this is what we typically want to aim for, or kind of just a smooth, soft sausage or snake shaped. just laughing at the Mr. Hanky reference still.
Yeah.
As far as frequency goes, generally 1 to 2 per day is going to be pretty normal. Maybe occasionally more than that, but 1 to 2 per day is going to be pretty normal for most. Honestly, if we're going too much less frequently than 1 per day, there's typically some issues going on there, or some things we could improve. And again, like we'll talk a little bit more about why this is important. As far as gas goes, some gas is normal. I think this is something where like, I think people think there's like something wrong if like something that you eat gives you any gas. It can be a normal part of the digestive process, especially depending on the foods that we're eating, but it shouldn't be excessive. Similarly, bloating, kind of tying into that, a bit of bloating is normal throughout the day, right?
We're talking about like the difference between like chronic, right? Like every now and again, okay, chronic gas or bloating, like that might deserve some attention.
I would say like Chronic or Extreme, either yeah. or, but it probably will be something that pops up chronically if it truly is an issue for you. And with bloating, again, like this normal to have some, you won't look as flat, your abs won't look as tight, whatever, early in the end of the day as they will early in the day, right? Your stomach is literally just full of more food. Even similarly, like when a client isn't in a reverse, is like done with the fat loss phase and going to the reverse diet, we still experience like a little bit more bloating just because there's more gut content and your stomach is sensitive to gut content. But again, it shouldn't be extreme. We shouldn't have a large amount of distension or anything of the sort. It shouldn't be like when I just drink a bit of water, I get bloated. I think bloating though is oftentimes one that is a little bit misunderstood and it's kind 100%. Of just a catch-all. So it's very, I think bloating when someone says like, hey, I'm bloated, we always need more context. There's always so much more to dig into there. And if you are, it'll almost always coincide with the Bristol stool chart. Hey, where are you at there? And then that like, so addressing symptoms based on that will typically get us to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I think people confuse bloating a lot with just being full.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, I ate a giant bowl of pasta and now I'm bloated. It's like, well, yeah. Yeah, I would be too. You know, but like, are you actually bloated or are you really just full? You know, right. But things that kind of don't really check out are like waking up in the morning. Obviously, you're fasted, right? You haven't eaten since dinner time. So waking up and being bloated. Right. And like, when I say bloated, I mean like your belly's distended and it's kind of like hard, right? It's not squishy. It's like, and what bloating really is like, basically gas inside your stomach. That's what's pushing it out. And that's what's causing the bloating, whether it's hydrogen or methane, like it right. could be any of those things. But that is typically what is the cause for bloating, not just like eating in excess one meal or like, you know, few extra like carbs here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, with like the bloating thing, we aren't actually going to dig into this when we're coming to resolving things, because again, it's almost always linked to, you will either be constipated or have diarrhea if you are bloated. So again, kind of think of bloating as typically like the downstream, like one of the side effects of that. So I think solving for that typically makes more sense. And then finally, hey, we're probably not experiencing acid reflux. Anything else to add there before we get into common digestive issues and their causes and also how to solve them?
Nope. Let's go.
Cool. All right. Let's get into constipation. Everybody's favorite topic. Would you say this is more common than the, than diarrhea when you're like solving things with clients? I'd say so probably.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So when we are talking about constipation, first, some downstream issues as we'll call it. Because again, I think it's kind of, for a lot of people, this is like normal. I'm always shocked at how many people it's like, I poop like twice a week or three times a week and that's fine. And again, like there's a lot of context here, but most people won't actually feel their best if that's the case. But again, this is going to create a lot of discomfort first and foremost. Again, this is an important part of the detoxification process, which is, people hate the word detox. Like your liver detoxes your body fine. And your liver does again help with detox, of course. Like, but when we're talking about detoxification, also like one of the final step, the final step of that is you pooping it out, right? You pooping
all those things out. Eliminating
waste. Right. But if we're not eliminating that waste, then again, that's where things like, hey, clearing excess estrogen from your body, then okay, that will be reabsorbed. And again, it's not like everything that is in our rectum is just reabsorbed. But again, like things like estrogens can be. And again, that can lead to things like painful periods, for example, and a lot of downstream issues. Similarly, if your body is having trouble moving things through your system, it'll also be slow to absorb and use new foods and microbes being consumed, which, similar to what we talked about with diarrhea, will also have a negative impact on muscle growth and on hormone production. Getting into this, on the Bristol stool chart perspective, again, if you looked up the Bristol stool chart, typically when we're talking about constipation, this will typically look like almost like either A, your poops when you are pooping will look like the little rabbit poops, which are going to be separate hard lumps. And again, those little drops, like little whoppers, terrible candy. Or it'll, again, typically be type 1 or type 2 here, or kind of very small sausage shaped but extremely lumpy, rather than that smooth sausage shape that is the type 3. So that's typically what we'd be looking at as far as bowel movements go.
And typically hard to pass as well.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So common causes here. The most common is just under consuming water. This is so frequent. There have been a lot of times where it's interesting how frequently people seem to correlate this with protein intake. When in reality, I see more often than not, like if someone is truly like eating excessive protein, I typically see that results in like diarrhea more so than like someone's constipated. But I've had so many times where it's like, hey, I really know my protein this week. And for a client who's kind of just getting dialed in, but I was constipated. And it's like, hey, but also let's look at this. Like when we're asking about your water intake, you are well below like 100 ounces per day. Kind of thing is of water as lubricant that will kind of help move things through your system. So if we're not drinking enough water, that will create some issue. I would say really like aside from fiber, that's probably the most common cause of someone being constipated. So here I typically like to just ask, we have clients like give us a general idea of what your water intake is like. It's going to be a good idea to make sure you're drinking at least 100 ounces per day. I also will typically like to ask someone about their urine color. If it's like, oh, I'm for sure drinking plenty, then okay, well, let's see. Like, are you typically like a very light yellow? Also similar to Bristol stool chart, but for urine, I'll send over like, hey, where are you typically on this chart? Because a lot of times it is just water is the issue. Mm-hmm. Anything to add there?
Yeah, it's also another reason why, you know, a lot of people have this problem when they travel. Because a lot of people, coincidentally, aren't on top of their water intake when they're traveling.
Right.
They're out of routine. You know, they're not sitting at their desk with their Target Stanley or whatever.
Right.
So yeah, that's a common reason we'll see constipation with traveling. But yeah, more often than not, like this clears it up very, very easily.
So one of the things I always give my clients when traveling, like, hey, I want you to start the day by chugging like at least 20 ounces of water.
Yeah.
So many people struggle with that. Eating fiber added foods or artificial sweeteners. So things like Quest bars, erythritol, or xanthan gum are extremely common offenders that lead to GI distress and painful bloating and constipation. So things like Catalina Crunch is such a good example of this. That's extremely common. Yes, that Catalina Crunch cereal, the Magic Spoon cereals, the low carb tortillas, Quest bars are an extremely common offender. A lot of protein bars are honestly like all of your, even like your nut butters. Like what's the brand? American Dream? Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out. That's another very common offender I see, but really again, like kind of the flexible dieting foods is almost always like foods that are marketed towards a like quote unquote healthier crowd. Hey, this tastes good, but the calories are lower, or it's like blueberry almond butter or something like that.
Like think to yourself, the foods where you like look at the nutrition label and the macros are just like too good to be true. And you're like, what is this sorcery? It's like, usually that comes with a digestion red flag. And when I'm like cruising clients' food logs, maybe we're struggling with some of these issues. Man, if I had like a nickel for every Quest bar that I found,
you would have like $50.
And I love that. But seriously, like it's so often I find something like this in the food log. And it's like, hey, you know, and sure, maybe they need to increase their water intake as well. But it's like, hey, let's just try eliminating this and see what happens.
Yeah. From there, fiber, not enough or too much. And both can be issues. So typically, we're going to aim for something like 10 to 15 grams of fiber per 1,000 calories consumed. So if you were eating 2,000 calories per day, we're probably going to want to aim to be between 20 and 30 grams of fiber. Now, going up to a little higher than that, not going to be a big deal for most people. If we start to get too high, like I remember Andrea when I coached her, and I think she had pulled it back at this point, and I know she's pulled it back a ton since then, and this has been like a big part of her improvement. This was, keep in mind, this was years and years ago, but I think she was eating like 60, 70 grams of fiber at like 1,600 calories. I had another client more recently who she was only eating like 1300, 1400 calories, and she was almost to 100 grams of fiber a day. It was like purely volume, and her digestion was not good. Now, this can cause constipation. Also, it can, like in her case, it was diarrhea, and actually like pulling that back to a more normal amount, of course, helped improve that. But again, it's like fiber isn't always something where more is better. I've had clients as well where it's like, hey, should I add a fiber supplement in? My doctor said like sometimes these can be helpful, not even like for anything, just like in just like a very broad recommendation, or like this person's taking fiber, should I take fiber? And it's, hey, if our digestion is fine, if we're hitting our fiber needs, it's probably more isn't necessarily going to be better.
The thing about fiber too is that it is so highly individual. Different people have different, I use these guidelines as well. But like different people have different thresholds for fiber, right? Some people do need a little bit more. Some people need a little bit less, but we see this a lot with people who are playing the volume game, you know, like how much food can I get in on lower calories? Kind of like what you were saying, like someone on 1600 calories who like is, you know, like 50 grams of fiber or something like that. It's like, excess amounts of cauliflower rice, for example, because, you know, again, cauliflower is very like low calories, so we can eat a lot of it for very few calories. So like great diet hack, if you will, but you kind of reach a point of diminishing returns. And, you know, people who are, you know enough to be dangerous here, like the educated dieter, you know, can abuse this a little too much.
Okay. I fully agree. So then when we're talking about fiber, we need to also get into insoluble versus soluble fiber. And this is, again, like kind of, I would look at this almost as like our order of operations when troubleshooting this with a client. So basically we are going to have several different types of fiber, insoluble and soluble. So soluble fiber is going to attract water and turn to gel during digestion. This is going to slow digestion. So think things like oats, barley, rye, fruit, peas, apples, citrus fruits, carrots, I already said barley, psyllium husk. Insoluble fiber is going to add bulk to the stool and probably helps food pass more quickly through the stomach intestines and its intestines. So Brussels sprouts, nuts, cauliflower, potatoes, whole grain bread, bran, cereals, seeds. So when we're looking at, okay, is the client eating enough fiber, right? We're pretty confident that they're in a good range here. We've ticked all those boxes. If it's like, hey, this person has diarrhea, we might actually look to, okay, let's look at your insoluble fiber sources and let's reduce those and increase and exchange those for basically more soluble fiber sources. Or on the flip side, if this client is constipated, we're probably going to look to reduce those soluble fiber sources and exchange them for insoluble fiber sources to get things moving through the system a little bit more quickly. And again, this isn't like the first thing we would typically jump to, but it is sometimes required. From there, low stomach acid can also be a culprit here, right? That is really going to aid in the process of breaking things down in the process of digestion. Honestly, relatively common. Stress is actually going to really deplete your stomach acid. And a lot of people are hella stressed looking at you, Natalie. I'm just kidding. But stress will deplete stomach acid. So, and this is pretty common as well. So here we can do something called the baking soda test. Now, this is not a prescription, just general information. You can do a baking soda test where what we'll have someone do is drink a half glass, about 4 ounces of cold water, combined with a quarter teaspoon of baking soda on an empty stomach first thing in the morning. Then basically just time how long it takes you to burp. And if it takes longer than 3 to 5 minutes, the theory is you probably don't have enough stomach acid. So then from there, we can dig into kind of how we go about addressing this, which again, will depend on the individual, but some basic things that can help, like apple cider vinegar can help with this. This can help increase their stomach acid. I have quite a few clients who hate me for having them drink the apple cider vinegar in the mornings, but hey, y'all aren't constipated anymore. So
also take a capsule.
Yeah, there are also the capsules. I sometimes just hold out telling people there's capsules. I have one client specifically who I have done this with just because I think it's a good, sometimes I think it can be good, a good, like, hey, this is a way to start our morning. Also though, I honestly just found out their capsules. I like didn't know this till extremely recently, like within
just the last trying to get someone weeks. To like build up some grit.
Yeah, it is a good way to build up some grit, but, we can also go with the capsules. Yes. Which are, as I very, very recently found out, are going to be a lot easier to get down. You don't have to have the taste of apple cider vinegar. And then there are other things we can look at, like betaine, for example, but I don't want to get too deep into that because that's going to be more specific to the individual. But apple cider vinegar, again, just going to help with digestion. So again, it's kind of like a lot of people like shit on the apple cider vinegar thing. And I don't know what like the proposed benefits of apple cider vinegar were, but there are instances where
people are like, oh, it detoxes. You know, that's kind of like the old wives' tale or like diet culture kind of thing. But we're actually not coming at it from that standpoint at all. It's literally right. Like it can help provide like the acid that you are lacking. Right. And if it's really a problem, you could even like take it with each meal, let's say. So it doesn't just have to be, but you could take it with like every big meal that you have.
And also, of course, within that, we want to look at addressing the root cause, which is like oftentimes stress, and we need to address that as well. But yeah, that can be, it can be again, something we don't necessarily have to do this forever, but it can help. And then oftentimes, finally, if all else fails, or we see other signs like brittle hair, nails, constantly feeling cold, trouble with weight loss, hypothyroidism and slow digestion often go hand in hand, right? So someone is constipated a little bit more frequently. Again, like someone with hypothyroidism, that's a little bit more common. So here we would, of course, want to make sure we're checking their micros. So are you getting plenty of, and well, this is something we'd be on top of when the client started, but are you getting plenty of selenium, zinc, iodine, B vitamins? Across the board, we're hitting your micronutrient needs, but those are going to be some of the heavy hitters when it comes to your thyroid. But again, can often be one of the symptoms of hypothyroidism, a slow thyroid. And then from there, probably at that point, we would want to check labs out as well. Finally, dieting on very low calories. If you're literally just eating less food, can be, especially like as you get, I know for me, like when I get closer to my photo shoot, bowel movements might be a little bit less frequent. It still shouldn't be. You're probably not eating such a small amount of food that it's like once every 3 days. Should still be at least semi-consistent, but it can be a little bit less frequent. Anything else on constipation, Natalie?
Mm-mm.
All right. Let's talk about diarrhea. So some downstream issues that are going to stem from diarrhea. Actually, to bring it back to the Bristol stool chart. So here, again, we're typically looking at type 5 through 7. So maybe it's soft blobs with clear cut edges that are passed easily as far as your poop goes. It could be this type 6, which is fluffy pieces with ragged edges and a mushy stool, or type 7, which is going to be watery, no solid pieces. It's entirely liquid. So some downstream issues. First, like we mentioned before, trouble absorbing nutrients, which is going to in turn hurt your ability to build muscle. You won't be able to support things like sex hormone production, your thyroid, a lot of your bodily functions. Because we're not absorbing all the nutrients we need to support those functions, will be less than ideal. Of course, having diarrhea isn't fun, and it can also even lead to things like dehydration. So some common causes of this, again, fiber. We don't need to get into this again. We won't go into the weeds of the skin, but again, not enough. Not enough is going to be more common as far as where this is going to stem from. But also, again, too much. Like I mentioned with that client, he was eating a shit ton of it. And it was, hey, actually, we are seeing diarrhea as a result of this. Also, again, the ratio of insoluble versus soluble. We may want to dig into there as well. Stress and poor sleep can be a common issue here as well. Do you want to take this one? Talk us through it.
Yeah. So stress can, I mean, this is a whole other topic. But we'll talk about it here. So stress can impact your digestion on many levels, because stress is usually okay. Well, let's start here. So the gut is often referred to as the second brain, and what we know is that the gut communicates with the brain through the nervous system, specifically through the vagus nerve, which is what connects the gut to the brain. So stress is largely like it's not something that's happening to you, right? It's like, it's your perception of what's happening to you. So that's like your brain intaking this information and stimulation of like all of the stressors in your life. And not necessarily just talking about like work stress, you know, relationship stress. I mean, there are those things, but it's also like trading stress, and also just stimulation, you know, like all the time that we spend on our screens and like hearing traffic noises and, you know, bright lights, like this is all in that stress bucket of like allostatic load. Mm-hmm. And because the gut and the brain share such close communication, it is very common that there will be some sort of kind of gut issue in like high stress individuals. So then we have to kind of talk about stress management tactics, which, you know, we can get into a little bit later if we have time. But think of it this way, you know, your parasympathetic state and your sympathetic state, right? So mm-hmm. parasympathetic state is your rest and digest, right? Sympathetic is fight or flight. So everyone loves to talk about like saber-toothed tiger, like back in the day of cavemen.
I love
right?
how that's always the example. Yeah.
It's the go-to, but you know, this audience has probably heard it before. So think about that. You know, it's like you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, like fight or flight, you're going to get the hell out of there. Right. Well, all of this stress, your allostatic load, all of this stimulation kind of like just constantly pushes us into that sympathetic state. We're just like mm-hmm. constantly overstimulated, and we're really very rarely anymore in rest and digest. So that's why this is so important when it comes to digestion, to properly manage your stress. And like I said, that could be a whole other podcast episode, but is super important to mention in any kind of digestion related conversation.
Absolutely. And yeah, when you're in that fight or flight state, the opposite of the fight or flight state is the rest and digest state. So obviously when we're in that fight or flight state more consistently, we are going to not be resting and digesting, which will result in some digestion issues. And again, cortisol is very much related to that. Again, cortisol is high, you'll be in a fight or flight state. Again, this can also create issues with salivary amylase and stomach acid being low. So again, that will really create some digestion issues as well. This is often, again, we talked about you talked about perception of stress, but often like talking through that with clients can be a very important factor. Yep. Talking through your sleep, talking through your caffeine intake is a huge one.
Caffeine's a stimulant, right? So like tying it back to what we were just talking about, like it is a stimulant. So again, it's like driving cortisol high, like it's driving that stress response. It's not that we can't ever have caffeine, but we have to look at it with respect to that entire allostatic load and what kind of stress you're under.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it definitely is, again, driving that whole total stress load higher. Even again, with this being so stress related, even like having loose stool can be a sign that someone needs to deload. When we're working through all these other things, like it is a lot more common when someone is like, hey, I've been pushing my training hard for a very long period of time. Again, we might experience more diarrhea. And that's, again, we've been pushing the stress load that your body is under. And when we pull that back, we often are able to fix that as well. I would say though, that's the least common like cause when it's like, hey, we actually just need to deload and there's nothing else going on here as far as why you have diarrhea. So,
and I wish it was simple.
Yeah, I wish. So please don't jump there first. Also, eating foods we don't tolerate well. The cauliflower rice was a good example that you mentioned. I see that as one, because also it's not necessarily even like foods you would think of as like quote unquote unhealthy, but like cruciferous veggies, especially uncooked, for a lot of people will cause issues. And like cauliflower rice, you are getting a shit ton of cruciferous veggie and cauliflower. That is one of the most common ones that just wrecks people's stomachs. And again, I see oftentimes causing digestion. What do you see as far as like foods people don't tolerate well? Like, what do you have here?
With things like cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, a lot of it is like the dangers in the dose too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you actually might be fine with like a reasonable amount of something like that. But, you know, again, you get into that volume eating and all of a sudden it's not fine. So it's like, don't be so quick to write off some of those foods. It could just be like a matter of dose.
Mm-hmm. Gum is another very common one. Both the artificial sweeteners in there and actually just the act of like, we're constantly kind of like chewing and swallowing air.
Yeah.
And pulling that into our stomach as well. I remember we were talking about that on our mentorship call this morning. I remember my first photo shoot prep, I was going through like 2 packs of gum a day. And I remember like suddenly my digestion was just jacked up. And I was like, what is going on here? And then it just pulled back the gum and it wasn't an issue, but it was a learning experience for sure. What about meal timing and frequency? How would we impact or how would we adjust this?
Yeah. So, you know, you'll hear a lot out there in the space, like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, just hit your macros, just hit your calories. Like, and if you want to have one meal, go for it, you know, or a lot of people, you know, will have like a bunch of meals spread out through the day. And, you know, if that works for you and you have no issues, by all means, but sometimes what we find is like, especially when you're not dieting and you're on higher calories and like, you're just like eating kind of constantly throughout the day, you're not really giving your MMC, which would be your migrating motor complex, time to do its job. So you want to think about your migrating motor complex as kind of like street sweepers. I heard someone describe it that way and it makes a lot of sense. They kind of like go in there and clean things up in between meals. So reducing meal frequency could be a great strategy here. So if you're, you know, someone who is consuming like six meals a day, and like I said, calories are like kind of high and you're just kind of like constantly eating because let's face it, eating is super fun. You could try dialing that back to maybe like 3 to 4 meals a day and like actually give your digestive system a break in between and see if that helps. And, you know, generally not a bad idea to stimulate a little bit of hunger ahead of your next meal.
Absolutely. And I mean, even looking deeper, I think like understanding like foods you may be sensitive to, we kind of touched on this before, but even like I know I've had clients where it's like, hey, we had looked at labs and we found out you had celiac and we didn't like, that wasn't something that you were aware of before. Like there's a lot more we could go into here, but again, these are going to be like the basics that apply for most people. We have a couple of minutes here and we talked about stress quite a bit. Anything else you wanted to touch on and like stress being the root cause of both of these issues to a degree, or one of the root common root causes, anything else you want to touch on as far as easy things we can do to manage stress?
Yeah, there are a few things that I like to suggest. This is such low hanging fruit, which is why I like to go there because I find it can be really impactful. So it's like, hey, why not try? Big fan of like deep breathing or like box breathing before your meals. So kind of like we were talking about that sympathetic parasympathetic state, like you want to get yourself into rest and digest. That's why it's called rest and digest, right? That's where we do our best digesting. So again, think like you're at work all day. It's go, go, go. You're like eating lunch at your desk, you know, and you're like boss pokes his head in like to your cubicle and like, hey, I'm going to need that TPS report filed or whatever, you know, like in an hour and you're like shoving food down. You're like, oh my God, like that is not rest and digest. Right. So this idea of like deep or box breathing, that was an Office Space reference, by the way, if anyone got that, great movie. Deeper box breathing, like, what I like to do is something like you could do a 4 second, there are a million variations of this, by the way. So you can do like a 4 second inhale, 2 second hold, and then 4 second exhale, like 3 to 5 times. Like, again, that won't take you much time at all before each meal. And that should calm things down. Speaking of, you know, eating lunch at your desk at work, try to eliminate screens. So TV, phone, computer during your meals. Like we were talking about with stress, this is just a stimulation that is happening as you're eating that, again, takes you out of that rest or digest. Slow down your eating. So again, most of us are pushed for time, right? So we're kind of just like shoveling it in, like we're on deadlines. Actually take time. If you need to, set a timer, like set a 15-minute timer to and challenge yourself to like drag your lunchtime out to be eating for those 15 minutes. Make sure you're chewing your food thoroughly, like to applesauce consistency. So to my earlier point in this podcast, digestion begins in the mouth. There are a lot of salivary enzymes that immediately start breaking your food down. Post-meal walks is a big one, something I've been doing a lot of lately. Even just like 10 minutes, doesn't need to be a mile or anything like that. But that can really help stimulate digestion after a meal. And then just kind of some general things I'll talk through with clients. Like, are you rushing throughout your day? You know, are you like, do you wake up in the morning, like hair on fire, like jumping out of bed? Like, oh, I gotta get going. I gotta slam this pre-workout, like get to the gym, get my workout. I know that that is me, by the way. So I know this archetype well. Are you winding down properly before bedtime? So again, might want to limit your screen time there. And, you know, give your body a chance to get back into that rest and digest state. And yeah, those are the main points that I had there. But I consider all of those things like pretty low hanging fruit, but it's the totally unsexy stuff that no one wants to talk about or actually try because no, it couldn't possibly be that. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that, you know, I have been battling my own GI issues for some time now. And I've been pretty religious about the things that I just talked through. And I'm doing a lot of other things too. But I've honestly like given these things a real go and I found them to be very effective. And also just for my mental state as well, because as I said, I tend to be a very like rushing out of bed in the morning, like, you know, gotta get to the gym, gotta do this. And like all of these things have really helped me to kind of just like, again, slow down and reduce my stress load. And it's been really nice, honestly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you've done an incredible job managing all of that. But I think it's important before you hire a coach to consider the things like this as well, because it is easy to hire a coach and just want to, I'm not where I want to be. I need somebody to get me to train 6 days a week or 7 days a week, or tell me I need to lower my calories more. Maybe you probably, okay, you don't need to train 6 or 7 days a week, but a lot of times it's like, hey, we actually need to fix your digestion. We need to reduce your stress. We need to fix your sleep, right? Where the things where it's, people don't want to hear that as much as we need to push harder. We're going to crush you more, especially again, like that, like very type A person we tend to attract. But oftentimes this is one of the missing pieces, which is again, like it's not people's favorite topic, but it really is such an important variable in your ability to get results. So hopefully that was helpful. Anything else you wanted to add before we wrap it up, Natalie?
No.
Cool. All right. On that note, you're basically poop should look like Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo. As always, we appreciate you guys for tuning in and we will catch y'all next time.